Oh, okay. We're ready to start. It's after 3 o'clock. Thank you, everybody, for coming to our ELA session, the last session of the day today. We will be giving some updates for the 2026 assessment. I'm Jennifer Grivens, the K-12 Assessment Specialist on the Test Development Team.
I'm Nikki Mosser, and I am the ELA consultant. I work on K through 8. And our presentation overview, for those of you who have been to this session before, we wanted to make sure that we put any new updates at the beginning. So up until about slide 40 will be some new information that we're sharing. And then if you wanted, don't have to, I'm not scaring you away, but if you wanted to go to another session, this is kind of going to be review.
One thing I'm really excited about was I remembered from back in the day making links from one slide to another slide, and that one over on the PDF that's posted on the folders for this conference. So if you get this presentation, you can actually click on those links, and it will take you to the different parts of the PowerPoint or the PDF.
Okay, so to start, in the session earlier this morning, there were some updates, and they talked a lot about the dyslexia law. And if you weren't able to attend that session, I just wanted to touch base with you and kind of give you an overview. So go ahead, Jennifer. So here are two resources. This is the Literacy and Dyslexia Law website, where there's lots of resources for you to take a look at. And then on March 20th, they're going to have a presentation, and you can sign up your school to have like a watch party, and it's free. So please do that. So how will students now be diagnosed with dyslexia? Well, just because it's called the dyslexia law does not mean it's going to diagnose dyslexia. So PA 146 is not about diagnosis. It focuses on screening pupils for characteristics of dyslexia and then providing evidence-based instruction and intervention based on their needs. So here's kind of it in a nutshell. The Michigan legislation passed this on October 10th, 2024, and the intent is to help educators and provide them professional development and tools so that they can improve their instruction and align it with the science of reading. And then one of the things that came out in the law is that MDE was responsible for providing a list of approved reliable screeners and progress monitoring tools. So in December, that list was created. There are currently two options on that list, but vendors can still submit. I think there are three more additional times that they can submit, and then the ART team reviews those submissions. And so that list may be growing, but right now there are two approved screeners. Oops, can you go back one slide? And then by August 1st, 2027 would be the first implementation of the dyslexia law, where your school district would need to use those one of the two or more that are on the list to do screening and progress monitoring. And then here's the assessment review team that I mentioned, and those people are reviewing all of the vendor submissions and making sure that they are research-based and follow the criteria that's outlined in the law. So here are the two, Amira and MCLASS with Dibbles 8th edition.
Passage-based writing is another item we wanted to talk about because we've released two new passage-based writing samples on the OTTs, and we've released the scoring guides. So we want to let you guys know where those are at and show you around them a little bit. So you know the passage-based writing is one item on the M-STEP assessment. It is administered on the online Insight software near the beginning of the test, usually around item number 7. Students have the option to read or listen to the passage, and we're going to be showing you that example from the fourth grade OTT today. Students can type their response into the area next to the passage. We do have, we'll talk later, review later, the context the students read are written by Michigan authors, and those contexts are written to right to the Michigan ELA standards. So you'll find this in the content standards. We have literature context, which includes stories, dramas, and poetry. And we also have nonfiction, historical, and scientific and technical text that the students will encounter on the M-STEP assessment. The standards are aligned to the writing standards, and this is one way we test the writing standards on the M-STEP is this written response. The 3W2 is for third grade, the writing standard, and this is being able to write a text to convey information and ideas clearly. They'll have an introduction, develop topics, use linking words, and provide a concluding statement. The other standard that's aligned to the PBW is the W8 standard, and this one's for the third grade. Recall information from experiences, or gather information from print and digital sources, and take brief notes. So that's the context portion of the PBW.
And then Jennifer talked about grade 3. In grades 4 through 7, there are a couple additional standards. So these are the standards that align. And I just pulled out grade 5 as an example, but they follow the same pattern. So for grade 5, write informative and explanatory text to examine and a topic and convey ideas and information clearly. Link ideas. Use precise language and domain-specific vocabulary and provide a concluding statement. And then produce clear and coherent writing in which the development and organization are appropriate to task, purpose, and audience. Recall relevant information and summarize or paraphrase. Draw evidence from literary or informational text to support analysis, reflection, and research. Apply the standards, and compare and contrast two or more character settings, events, and apply grade 5 reading standards to informational text. Along with our STEM for the passage-based writing item, we've also included a I was going to say we have a bulleted list where the students can check to make sure that they've done what they're supposed to do in their writing. But then this is talking about the scoring rubric, and there's a link there, and we'll get into that a little bit further on. So here's the rubric. Show of hands. For the passage-based writing item, it is one item. How many points is it worth? What is the best score you can get? Okay, yep, the best score is a 4. Students can score a 4, 3, 2, 1, or a condition code, which would be a score of 0. And we'll review that in just a minute, too. On this rubric, in this column right here, you'll see bulleted items. If you read across the top, it will give a description of what a 4 is, demonstrates effective analysis of text and skillful writing. And then if you move to column 3, demonstrates adequate analysis. So you can see where the verbiage changes. And then in 2, demonstrates limited analysis. And 1, demonstrates minimal analysis. So like the top column, the bullets follow the same progression. So the first one effectively addresses all parts of the task, in-depth understanding. The next one adequately addresses, and then sufficient understanding. A 2 is inconsistently addresses with partial understanding, and a 1 minimally addresses with an inadequate understanding. Ready? So as Jennifer is moving this one along, you can kind of see the differences between each of those bullets as you go across the columns.
We'll be talking too about how you can use this in your classroom or letting your teachers know about how you can use this as a tool in the classroom.
So that's the bulleted list. And then this year we released two items. One was at grade 4, one was at grade 6. We wanted to have a younger released item and then an older. And the first one is the right place at the right time. Here are some links to that. And the second one is the fight for Toledo. Yeah. Sure. So what this is what the students are going to see. And most of you probably know, but in case you don't, there is a play button, and it's set up just like our listening items. And the student can hit play and listen to a human voice reading the entire story to them. Then they can also stop it and then re-listen to it as many times as they need to. The purpose of this is because it is a writing task, so we don't want them to have to use all of their decoding skills in order to get through the context. We want to know how they can respond to the context. So go ahead, Jennifer.
The right place at the right time. Putting down the phone, Russell frowned. I can't find anyone to go to the movie with us. Everyone I talk to says it's either the wrong time or the wrong place. It's all right with me if it's just the two of us, said Dad. My friends and I like to see movies together, explained Russell. Then later, we like to talk about what happened in the movie. Sometimes it's hard to come up with a schedule that works for everyone, Dad said. I'm confident you'll figure out something. You just need to be flexible. Flexible, Russell repeated as his face brightened.
You can close out of that. You want to close out of that? Thanks. So as you can see, it's a human voice. It doesn't sound robotic. It would be like a student was listening to it in the classroom. Here's the slider that the student can move to the end of the text if they want to repeat the ending. And then if we go to the next slide, that's what you saw previous. Go ahead. Okay, so for the passage-based writing, there are some tools. And up at the top, where it's underlined, you can see the highlighter and then a little sheet, and that's, thank you. That's our Post-it. So if the student wants to, he or she can go through and they can highlight the text that they find important within the text and that they want to use in their writing for evidence or support. And then they can open up the notepad and kind of do an outline. So that's what this is over here. So they have their introduction and they type something they wanted to write about, what they're going to do for paragraph 1, 2, 3, and what they're going to do for the conclusion. Now this is blank when the student opens it. That's just a sample of how it can be used. And then taking that information, they have their highlights over here and they can use the scroll button to go up and down. It will stay highlighted. Here's their notepad with their organization. And then the student can begin writing and this is where they would do their response. Anything that's in this section here will not be graded. That's just for note-taking. This is where the graded response would be.
You can find these examples, the OTT, and the student score essay score release on the MDE website. As Nikki said, we released 4 and 6 this year. We're hoping to release the other grades next year. We just need to build up our item banks system, our items in the bank system, before we can release more. The scoring guides are interactive on the website. So you click on it, opens up the scoring guide. What a scoring guide is it's what is used by the scorers when they score the student assessments. So they're used as examples. And they're used to train scorers on how to use the rubric to evaluate student essays. And the really cool part is that teachers help to make these scoring guides. So we have a teacher committee, the range finding committee helps to create these scoring guides, and we listen to what they say and use that as part of our input. So you can see here on each one, we have the table of contents, and we have examples for score points 3, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and non-score examples. This is a score point of 4 student paper, and this is one of our students in Michigan wrote this for fourth grade based on that right place at the right time. And you can see here that they have a 5-paragraph essay. They have an introduction. They have a conclusion. And they're using those transition words, first, another, and last. They're using examples from the writing, and they're giving, with the evidence, an explanation. And when we look overall, we're saying that this is a highly effective writing piece that addresses the prompt and the context. So the other part, we have an annotation. And these annotations are written by MDE and DRC as we go through and we do the range finding with the teachers. And you look at these words, and these are the same words that you'll find on the rubric. So having a rubric printed out in front of you is a great thing to do while you're reviewing the score, these student papers. And you can say, oh, this is where we'd find this in the rubric and how it works. It's a holistic rubric. We'll mention that. We've mentioned that a lot. So it doesn't mean that that student had all the 4 points. They might have been like on the edge on a couple, but overall, they had a very effective writing. So we have an example here that's on our release papers on the website. This is a score point of 3. You can look that. This is a little bit more of an outline, but they are addressing parts of the prompt and using evidence. So that's what the annotation is going to talk about. Adequately addresses all parts of the task using supporting information, and the errors aren't interfering with writing. But in there, there's a couple things that brought it down to a 3. A score point of 2, just because something's shorter doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a 2. Our last range finding committee that we had shorter responses that were up in the 3. They weren't broken down by paragraphs, but they addressed the prompt and the context in a great manner. But you see on this one, they only have about a sentence for each piece of evidence, and they don't have as much evidence from the context. And that's what the annotation is going to tell you. So it's a great way to look at student examples and look at the annotation, reflect with the rubric, and think about how student writing evolves and what kind of writing the students are doing in the classroom and what kind of writing they are capable of doing on the MSTAP. A score point of 1, very short response. But they still addressed the prompt, they gave some evidence, and they gave a reflection on that evidence. And this one even said this response is a low 1. So this is just right, kind of hanging on the edge there, but it's not a non-score because they addressed the prompt. One new item that we've released non-score examples for grade 4 and grade 6 with these scoring guides. So this would be a condition code M. It's considered off-purpose. And this is a direct copy from the context. There's no yes or no. There's no student input. It's just direct copy. We've actually come across some of these. They're 4 or 5 paragraphs long. that are an M because they're direct copy. And I just can't imagine a student just typing all that out. But
yes, because on there, students cannot cut and paste from the text onto where they put their answer. So if it's a direct copy, they have literally typed it all out.
So we do have grade six, and we just wanted to show you where grade six is. The Fight for Toledo, and we presented this in another venue, and somebody's like, oh, the Fight for Toledo! this is a sixth grade, and this is more of an informational. The other one was a narrative. So this is an example of an informational, so we wanted to do that as a release, too. And that also has a scoring guide with all the score points and insufficient examples. It's much longer. I spliced it. So it has multiple examples in there. And let's see.
Okay. So one way that you can help your students not to cover content, but instead to cover test takings, like strategies, this is what you're going to encounter, this is how it's set up, and here are the tools and how to use them, is by going to the online training tools. You'll notice that the arrow is pointing to MSTEP, but we also have our early literacy and mathematics benchmark assessment also on here, MyAccess, Smarter Balance interim assessments, and the DRC Insight tutorial. So something that, in addition to using the online training tools, that is sometimes available to you is a field test. We did not do a field test this year, but if you look in that Spotlight magazine, that publication, not really magazine, that comes out every Thursday, you will be notified when we are going to do a field test. Doing the field test is beneficial for you and your students because it's just a practice. The students can listen or read the passage and then do a response and get used to using the tools and typing in their answers and their responses. Question?
Sorry.
Yes.
So you're not going to do a field test at all this year?
Not this year.
Okay.
Nope. Nope. Stay tuned, though.
I think before we go into this, too, Nikki had also talked about using the OTT to have students practice their writing. And she has talked before, yes, about using the student response papers.
Yes. So back before it was MSTEP and I was teaching fourth grade and I had an overhead projector, I would print out the student writing and then I would put it up there. I would not tell my class how the student scored, but I knew because of the sets that Jennifer referred to right here in the scoring guide. And so you can print off a student writing sample if you want to, and you can read through it with your class and then provide a rubric to each of your students and a highlighter, and you can go through each of the bullets and have your students score it as to why they think this paper is a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or a 4, and then you can have a discussion about what the actual score was and why. So it's always more fun to evaluate someone else's writing and be critical of them rather than your own. And so I found that to be a useful tool for preparing students as well.
And we've talked about this is a great tool for a PD with the teachers and having them do the same thing, giving them a student response, using the rubric, grading it, and then looking at the annotation that we provided and thinking about how you can impact students' writing by using examples such as these. Okay, so those are our two brand new things from this year. The MSTEP student enhanced student experience is from last year, so we debuted it in 2025. But we wanted to remind everybody, if you haven't been on OTT, on the online training tools and encourage your teachers to get the kids on there using them. The environment, the kids probably saw it last year, so they're more familiar, but they could go into their grade level and get familiar with the environment that we have. And so the tool buttons are up in the upper corner, and we find then that our K2 interim tests, that's a bigger impact because the kids have to go from the bottom up to the top. So having practice with that is a good thing. And all the action tools are all clustered together. We also have a settings button, the audio settings, where the kids can make it go faster or the volume go up or down within listening to the computer. And the pause, the starting points, and the play buttons. Remembering that the colors that the kids can use, the contrasting black on white is the one that is given, but they could use black on light blue or purple on green for those different color settings. And then the notepad is not just on the ELA test. They can use it, and provided this is an example of the math assessment. And then Nikki pointed out the highlighter before, and they can highlight the passage. And the great part is when they slide up and down on the passage, that highlighter stays there with what they highlighted. So this is an example of a multiple choice, a reading passage with the multiple choice questions there, and the highlighting tool comes in handy for that too. And then the last thing is the final page, the kids encounter, and this is great for teachers because the kids raise their hand and they can't exit the test because they have unanswered questions. They might have skipped over them by accident, they might have not chosen it right, but they can click on these and go directly back to that question within the test engine so they don't have to like back arrow all the way back there.
So let's run through some sample item types. Before we do that, I think Andy showed you this slide. This is the estimated time that it would take a student to take the ELA test. So up here, in between the two arrows down here at the bottom, we have a button that I wanted to make sure to show you that says more. So obviously there's more text below, but also it's important to note that it's on the side where the student would select their response also, and that occurs sometimes when there's more options. So if it says more, the student would need to scroll down to make sure that he or she looks at all of the options. This is an example of a multiple choice, so the student just fills it in. This is a select text, so the question's saying read the source and choose one claim. Now, if the student has to choose more than one, you'll see that bolded in the actual question. And then the student here would go through and find the answer, click on somewhere in that sentence, and then it will highlight the whole sentence. This is a multi-select. So here it says choose two pieces of information, and so the student would select which ones. And the more button is showing, so there are more answer options further below. This is another sample of a multi-select, but that's with a context. And the other one was just an independent item. And that one says pick three. Here is an example of our listening. So when you looked at the passage-based writing, you saw this same toolbar up here. And for the listening and passage-based writing items, they are the same. Then on the right, it's a matching table. So it says, choose the box next to each type of light to show which detail it best matches.
The kids can only listen once?
Or? Nope, they can listen as many times as they would like. And then this is an example of order. So the student would click on one of these lines over here, And it's basically sequencing. So which happened first, you could move this here, move this down. And then when it's all done, they can read through it, make sure it's the way they would like it, and then submit. This is the reading testing layout. Always the context on that side, and then on your right would be the answer and the stem. This is an example of the listening layout. Now, sometimes this is what they would listen to, but then down here there might be a vocabulary term that is defined, so they can click on that second play button and it will give them the definition. So we have some frequently asked questions, so we'll stop here and go through these.
Do you all have any questions right now? I realize you didn't stop at the end of passage-based writing, or we'll have time for questions at the end, hopefully, too. This is a question for passage-based writing, and we kind of already addressed this. That it's at the beginning of the CAT, item number 7 usually. But if you're giving a paper test, which we don't have many, we give those anymore, it's on the first one on the second day of the paper test.
And then this is another question that we usually get. It sounds like this is the only writing piece. Is that correct? There is one passage-based writing or constructed response. However, the students have additional writing items that go along with the writing claim, and then I will run through that in an upcoming slide as to how the blueprint is laid out for the ELA assessment.
And as Nikki said before, it's a 4-point rubric. The students receive 4 points for their writing sample. Up to 4 points, so it's out of 4.
No extra credit. Then this question comes up as to where do I find assessment information. So there's a link there, and then all of the important dates.
So once again, yeah, all of our presentations are available in the folders provided with the conference, and these are all live links. So if you open up that PDF, you'll be able to go to any of these links that we provided. These are all the tests, all the assessments, not tests, all the assessments that we have. We have WITA, and we have MyAccess and K2, the benchmark assessments that we provide for the state of Michigan. And then MSTEP for science and mathematics and ELA and social studies. And then we get into the PSAT and the SAT.
Okay, here is the blueprint. I have on here many slides with the same thing, but sometimes people like to see it in a different way. So here are the claims, 1 through 4, reading, writing, listening, and research. And the item count range. So there is a range because sometimes with a certain passage, there might be 3 questions associated with it. Sometimes there might be 2 questions. So there's a range of between 14 and 17. So as you can see, that's the largest portion of the test. Writing makes up the second largest portion. So there are 12 to 15 items with 1 passage-based writing item. That 1 writing item is up to 4 points. So let's say there are 14 actual items on the test. 4 points would be the passage-based writing, and then the other 10 would be independent writing questions. Listening, 8 to 9, and research, 8 to 9, with a total of 45-ish items. This is the same information, just written in a different way. And then this is the claim, and then a sample of what the targets are, and then followed by the standard that covers that. And another way to view it, claim 1, reading has 3 to 4 reading passages, informational and literary, and 14 to 16 items, all selected response. Claim 2 is listening. There are 2 to 3 listening passages and 8 to 9 items, all selected response. claim to writing, there are 12 to 14 items. 12 to 13 items are selected response, and one passage-based writing prompt, one item per student. And then there's a four-point rubric. And then claim four, research, 8 to 9, all selected response, and they are all embedded in the CAP.
And with all those, I've heard over and over again in the different sessions I've attended that the summative assessment, we are aligned to the standards. So that we were showing the claims and that we are aligned to the standards and our items are. For checking that, we have a test development process. So every item goes through a test development process. This is for context writing and then developing the items with that. So we'll start by getting the context written and then edited. And then we do a review with teachers and educators for content and bias.
And that's where we are right now. We will be doing our context review coming up soon.
Mm-hmm. So we were getting to read all the new context, and we got kind of a little distracted. But and then we have Michigan teachers, our item writers. Are there any item writers here in the audience? In the session? Anybody else has served on our committees? Thank you very much. Yay. We're going to be encouraging that a lot. And then editing, and then we put it out on a field test, and then we review it again after we get the field test back and look for bias and sensitivity there based on the stats that come back in. And those are Michigan educators at that point, too. They're all throughout our committees attend so much of this test development process. We have range finding for constructive response items, scoring, and more data review, and then we get our pool of operational items. How long do you think, if I could have a couple volunteers, it takes for an item to become operational? 2 to 3 years? Anybody less than a year? I think 2 to 3 years is a really great estimate. Thank you. Because it has to go onto a field test and it has to get reviewed and go back and be in operational items. And some take longer because if they come back from the field test and we need to have them rewritten based on the stats, we'll put them back into a field test. So they get in there and we get those items out that are working really well to represent our curriculum. We do want Michigan educators. Every operational item on a Michigan assessment is seen through the eyes of at least 18 different educators from Michigan. So our committee work is super important, and as you, we had a lot of people that are administrative and go out and do outreach, and our literacy coaches in schools. Please let the educators know about this process. They receive paid travel expenses. They get a stipend, or their substitute cost is paid for by the state. And they can get sketchies if they come with us, if they have a substitute. So we appreciate their time, and we feed them. Most of us in our department had served on the committees at one point or another, and those perks are really nice because, in addition to that, it's some of the best professional development the teachers will have. They learn how to write test development. They learn how to write test items. They learn about bias and sensitivity. They learn about alignment to the curriculum. They learn about DOK levels. So it's a really excellent professional development for the teachers to participate in.
And you get to meet people from all of these different regions.
So we make sure we recruit and try to keep balance from all the regions of Michigan. We're always looking for people up in region one, because it's a little bit of a drive. So if you know of educators up in region one that you want to come down and hang out with us here in Lower Michigan. We run our committees in East Lansing, so that's a great meeting point for everybody.
Or region three.
Go green. Oh, what?
Or region three.
Yes, in region three too. We think it's because of the highways.
Regions.
So what can you do to be involved with these? Context writing for the K-2 context. We recruit Michigan teachers. We're always looking for Michigan authors. So if you have a children's book writer or in a magazine that you really like the way they write, let us know about them and we'll try to reach out.
Or if you know an Indigenous person who's also a writer, please let us know. We're always looking to broaden our pool of writers.
Range writing we've talked about, that's looking at the passage-based writing and applying the rubric to the passage-based writing. We have a context review, that's one that's coming up for K-2, and MSEP will come up later in the spring. Bias and sensitivity committees learn about characteristics in subgroups, and they learn about psychometricians and how to do data. I like the data part, I think, the best. Content advisory committees look at the alignment to the content standards. So when you serve on that committee, you're in the item bank system, you're looking at the content standard and saying, does this item meet this content standard? And doing that additional review with the MDE and DRC team. Item writers, we're always looking for item writers too. K through 8, we still develop grade 8 items. We're not releasing them right now because the PSAT is given instead right now. So we do it again for items. Bias and sensitivity. And the content advisory committees for both field test items and before they go field test items. And then once every couple few years, we'll run a data review where the committee is trained to understand and interpret statistics from the field tested items. And we'll do a standard settings as needed. And that's where the process, the description of the achievement levels and minimum scores necessary to be classified for each level. And that's a really in-depth professional development. You'll see that come up on the spotlight if you'd want to be involved with that. Here's our great big table. These are the number of opportunities for all of our ELA, mathematics, social studies, science, and my access. And there's the web links. That's sometimes hard to find. So pull this up. If you're talking, do you want to be a participant? That's the link.
If you're being invited to a committee, or if you think you might be getting invited to a committee, check your spam folder, first of all, but the email will come from CVent or DRC. It doesn't come from MBE. So if you see something that comes through from CVent, don't automatically delete it. Take a look. It might be an invitation to a committee member. That's what you need.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's yours. Go for it. Oh, your mic's off. So in many of the presentations, we've highlighted the spotlight. If you are not signed up to receive that, please do. Here's the link. And then I wanted to talk to you about our early literacy and mathematic benchmark assessment. So this is for grades kindergarten through second grade. It's completely aligned to the standards. It is 100% written by Michigan authors. All of the items are written by Michigan educators. Everything is reviewed and done from educators in Michigan. So I think that's a really powerful tool to know that. And if we go to the next slide, it kind of highlights some of the things that it offers. So color graphics, larger font size, no scrolling. It looks like a computer game. For grades kindergarten and first, there's that human voice like you heard on the passage-based writing item. There's a male and a female voice. There's text-to-speech for grade 2. Grade 2 has the more robotic-type voice. Human voice is only, like I said, for kindergarten and grade 1. And then it is vertically aligned to the third grade MSTEP. Has the same types of items, rigor, accessibility, and it's available in the fall, winter, and spring. And then here are the testing dates for that. And then here are some samples. The first slide is a sample of a grade 1 and a grade 2. So here it says move the letter that you hear at the beginning of the word map. It will say map to the line. And then the M is usually here, and the student clicks here and drags it over. It's really nice that they can see that actually in with the A and the P, so they can look at it. Does it look right? And then here is a grade 2 item. Choose the best word from the drop-down list to complete the sentence. And then the student would click here, the drop-down list would come down, and then they click on which choice. So you should be very proud of yourself for cleaning the whole bedroom. Now, if I could only get my kids to do that, that would be really great. So here's an example of what the reading context would look like. As you can see, it's set up just like M-STEP. So to me, that's a huge advantage, getting those kids ready, kindergarten, first, second grade. Up at the top there are the advanced buttons, but down here is a handy little turn page button. And so the student would listen to this, and then they would click on the turn the page, and it would flip. This is page 2 right here. And then it would read that to them. They would click on turn page, and it would flip to the third page. And then this is the last page. So after the last page, it automatically will read the stem, choose the picture that shows what happens last. And so they would just click on it. And anything that's outlined in blue, that would be their answer choice. So all of them initially are purple. And once they hover over it, it would change to blue. This is a kindergarten item. And then if you look over here, this is what an M-STEP question is asking, to put these in order. So you can see the progression. This is just asking one, like what happens last in the story. But then when you get over to an older question, they have all of the story being retold, so they have to do the beginning, middle, and end of the story. This is a grade 1 item. Jenny will add another sentence to her story about her favorite snack. Choose a reason that best tells why she likes it. Popcorn is the best snack. I did not do that deliberately, but yes, you got popcorn today. Tastes yummy. And so they have to choose the best reason. They would hover over it, and then it outlines it in blue. And then if you compare it to an M-STEP item, the student is writing a research report about the benefits of honey. The student found a source, read the source, and choose one claim that the author makes that is supported by credible or trustworthy evidence. So then they would go over and they would click on whichever sentence, and then it highlights it. Here is a grade 2. This is a matching. So we do have some items that are like that where they would click in the box. But this one is something that we would not give to the kindergartners just because of their age and ease of use. But they would click on the picture and then whatever the answer is, and then it forms a line, and then they do that for the next. And then if you compare it to grade 3, choose the box next to each type of light to show which detail it best matches. And so the student would have to do more reading and then click on the box for the answer choices. So again, if you look up here, same buttons, less choices for the lower L, more tools for the upper L. We do have reports, probably something you've seen. I know Andy, was it Andy or someone showed a report? No, it was the presenter this morning. Yes. So they are ready within 48 hours, and here are all of the different types of reports. The domain analysis, trend, individual student, student roster, demographic report, and change report.
And these are for the K-2 assessment offered through the state of Michigan on the DRC Insight software.
So here's the student trend report and the individual student report, the school demographic report.
So thinking about how these reports are best used to help your teachers and support their work in the classroom.
And these are, like Jennifer said, our K-2 reports. They identify where to apply more resources and time, and identify students that may need additional screening or remediation. And this is one piece of the puzzle, not the end-all, be-all.
This is something with the littles especially, you know, obviously that's what the assessment's for, but the state's putting money into or paying for MBA or STAR or iReady. I can't imagine doing both. But then when you go to do the grant, you kind of get into this catch-22 space because, yes, I provide a benchmark, but if you don't say, no, I didn't do NWA, or, you know, like, I didn't do NWA, then it kicks back the money and says, then you can't apply for the grant. So, like, are we supposed to do this in addition to?
No, this is one of the options. This is the free option. So we had to have a free option for lower L and then one for upper L. Upper L, the free option is the smarter interims. What's that?
No,
yes.
Correct. I understand that, but I'm saying on the grant side, when you're completing the grant, I don't remember seeing this as, I mean, I just finalized the grant last week. Like, I don't see.
Well, you wouldn't have to apply for the grant if you use the K-2 assessment. It's
but
free.
I'm doing it for K-8. So if you go to fill it out for the other grade levels, I'm providing NWA and the other grade levels, and I have to say no for kindergarten, and then it kicks back that you can't complete the grant.
Hmm. If you give me your name afterwards, I can get you in contact with someone who works with the grants.
I did call somebody
who
just put it in there, but then that will impact overall funding, which makes sense, but we already did, because the only thing that came up is we didn't do NWA in the fall for kindergarten because they didn't feel like they were ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so so I know that I just looked at all this, so that's what's got me thinking about it. Like, if you went with this option, I know it's free, I don't buy NWA. How is that going to impact my grant for the upper grades if I do buy NWA?
I wouldn't think that it would, but I've not sat in your shoes.
And I said it might be the glitch in Nexus, right? Or like the system, the way that it's designed in Nexus for how the.
And I feel like that grant had a lot of glitches. Yeah. On different days, we got different results.
Mm. So essentially, we had to go back and say, yes, we provided even though we didn't. And then we just put a note in. I mean, that was the direction I got.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering.
You should be able to do both, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I will take your question, comment back to the person who works with the grants. But if you want a connection, let me know afterwards, and I can definitely do that for you, too. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes.
I must suppose my district is really looking at the smarter balance interim assessments.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best pairing to use for K-2?
The best pairing.
That would be.
I'm going to use the grade 3 to write. I'm going to use the free option, the smarter interim. But what's the best pairing? What's the best K-2 that would go with that?
I would say ours, our early literacy and math, because because it follows the same test engine.
That connection often not.
Yeah.
And if you are going to start using the smarter tools, I mean, we wanted to include everything. Obviously, we had a bunch of slides, and there's some more after this for educator resources. But the smarter tools are an excellent resource that are free to all Michigan educators. And they do use the same engine that we use, and they are smarter balanced questions, and our items are written in the same way. So with the K-2 assessment, when you look on the Michigan Department of Education information about interim assessments, our K-2 assessment is clustered with DRC's Smarter Balance because we use the same test engine. and we use the same company to help us develop those tests.
So the people DRC does our K2, they help run our K2 committees, and they also run our MSTEP committees. So same test engine, same people who help prepare, same evaluations, like, yeah.
Just how we were able to do the vertical alignment.
Yes.
Any other questions out there?
Holly, did you want to add anything?
No.
Okay.
Holly is our math specialist with DRC, working on our assessments.
I do concur with John that, yes, it seems to me that if you are in the district of doing smart growth in your assessments at grades 3 through 7, you would definitely want to pressure your people to look into this as the option for K2. Because all three of them are going to be.
Well, thank you all for coming. Hopefully you got some popcorn and maybe you're going to enjoy a drink afterwards. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Yeah.
Thank you.